Hello, welcome to this edition of the Bearcats Blogcast. My name is Scott, joined, as usual, by Matt Oper. How's it going today, Matt?
It is going very well. We have a new football coach. So
yes.
That's good.
Just in case you somehow haven't heard, Luke Fickell, formerly Ohio State defensive coordinator, co-defensive coordinator. I suppose he's still Ohio State co-defensive coordinator. Accepted the job over the weekend. It's a six-year deal worth, being reported worth about $2.3 million a year with a $3.5 million buyout that goes down by half a million every year. How do you feel about Fickell taking the UC job?
He wasn't my first choice as a candidate, I'll be honest, but his resume speaks for himself. He's been a part of several national championship teams at Ohio State. He was the interim coach when the whole tattoo gate scandal went down at Ohio State. He kind of held the program together. That was not a good year results wise, but I think it says a lot about how he's viewed and how he's thought of in the coaching community. That when Urban Meyer took that job, his first move was to make sure that Fickell stayed on as defensive coordinator. Urban Meyer doesn't fuck around. When he sees talent, he acquires talent, and he, you know, pushes them to succeed at the highest level. We've seen that with Tom Herbin. We've seen that with a lot of his previous assistants as well, Dan Mullen, et cetera, et cetera. That Urban Meyer stamp of approval means a lot. You know, unlike Nick Saban, his coaching tree is filled with guys who have had a ton of success. That is encouraging for me. What I'm most curious about with Fickell, though, is how he's going to assemble his staff. He laid out a broad outline of how he wants to play. He wants to have a spread offense. He wants to play up tempo, all that, which is fine. You see, as a personnel for doing just that. So as long as, you know, that'll smooth the transition considerably. But I just want to know who he's actually going to go out and get.
Yeah, that's the big question in the room is, like, what's he going to do for his offensive coordinator? Like, it's one thing, everybody says they want to play fast and spread out defenses, but then, like, they come in and their offense is never like that sometimes. We do know two names who are going to be on the staff in one way or another. Doug Phillips, who was the director of player personnel at Iowa State, and Marcus Freeman, who was Purdue's co-defensive coordinator, linebackers coach, were both at the press conference, and Fickell said they're both going to be on the staff. I guess it's fair to guess that Freeman will be probably in the same role he had at Purdue, where he's at least a linebackers coach, maybe even co-defensive coordinator or full defensive coordinator.
Yeah, and Freeman's a really interesting guy because he was a decorated player at Ohio State, and he pretty much is on the same career trajectory as Fickell, with the noted exception that he left. He left to go to Purdue to basically gain a little bit more experience that wasn't going to be coming. You know, that DC role wasn't going to be open at Ohio State as long as Fickell was there. You know, even when they brought in Chris Ash to revamp the defense, they still retained Fickell in that role. So, yeah, I mean, like, I think Marcus Freeman's a guy who's going to have – he has an incredibly bright future in coaching. So having him on the staff is going to be a boon. It's just a matter of what role is he going to be in.
Speaking of Chris Ash, I suppose that has to be the worst-case scenario if you're not excited about Fickell, is that he has the same success that Chris Ash is having up at Rutgers right now. The two coaches that have been so far hired off the national championship team were Ash and Tom Herman. Herman had, obviously, great success at Houston, and now he's coach at Texas, and Ash is... But he had a disaster at Rutgers, so that's turned into even more of a disaster. That's just a really hard job now. But
That's the thing. Rutgers was always a hard job. Like, they had a 10-year run where they were very successful. That's an outlier. That historically, that's not what they are. This is more what they have been. So, like, it's just a tough job. There's not a lot of talent in New Jersey. With Penn State being back up, it's hard to recruit Pennsylvania again.
With Temple taking a ton of Pennsylvania recruits.
And that's the other thing. Temple is living in Pennsylvania, and they're also raiding New Jersey pretty regularly. P.J. Walker, sorry, Phillip Walker, is a New Jersey native, and I believe both their running backs this year were as well.
Because I'm definitely sure Jihad Thomas was a New Jersey guy. Like once I got like over the initial like, oh, they're just gonna get Ohio State's coordinator, like that just kind of, I don't know, I don't want to say it was laziness, but it's like, oh, they're just gonna take somebody big from Ohio State. I got it pretty on board with Pickle on board with Pickle pretty fast, because I don't think he's gonna stay 6 years at Cincinnati unless he's just an okay coach. But I think like you're definitely in a position where like, the whole entire league has gone through it, where you have to get hot names and build your program, and then just roll the dice from wherever it goes next.
Yeah, I mean you're walking a tightrope doing it that way, but UC was pretty successful for 20 years. I mean, Tubbs is really the only misfire in the last 20 years of UC coaching hires, and he wasn't that big of a misfire. I mean, he had a winning record here, which historically doesn't happen. He just, you know, there was a heightened set of expectations that he walked into and he could not fulfill them. But that's all to the good. That's for the growth of the program. That there are expectations for UC football is a positive thing. You know, it's not the job it was when Mark D'Antonio took it, where it was relatively low risk and high reward. There's risk. Like this, if this doesn't go well, this could derail a pretty successful, to this point, you know, career for Fickle. Because if you fail in a job like this, it's very hard to go up again. You can always get work as a coordinator at another, you know, at a good school, and that pays extremely well. But it's hard to make that step back up to head coaching if this doesn't go well. But at the same time, like, risk is involved in any hire. I have no problem with going with this guy. I think he will be he's just going to have a different approach to it. Like the thing about Urban Meyer teams that always stands out to me when I watch them is just how detail oriented they are. Like they have a plan for every eventuality. That's why Urban Meyer is Nick Saban's great foil for his career. Like no one else has gone toe to toe with Nick Saban and had any success except for Urban Meyer. And that's because Urban Meyer is just as anal and driven and competitive and, you know, obsessive about details as Nick Saban is. He seemed to have, you know, kind of instilled that dynamic with Tom Herbin. I'm hopeful that he has done the same thing with Fickle, because his Ohio State team, it was incredibly young the year that he took it over, but that was not a well-coached, drilled, detailed football team. Incredibly talented, but they did not give you that vibe.
And they had probably what, the worst quarterback in 20 years of starting quarterbacks at Ohio State.
Yeah. Bowserman was no good.
And following what, like Terrell Pryor and Troy Smith, and then leading up to all the people Urban Meyer has recruited to be quarterback. It's like a pretty gigantic drop off.
Yeah, Bowserman, you know, God love him. He just did not. He was not ready for that.
So, in the whole scheme of the AAC, where do you think Fickle's higher ranks in the big jobs that have been filled? Like Charlie Strong ended up at South Florida. Major Applewhite took over at Houston. Temple still hasn't hired a coach yet, but it seems like they're looking back in the pros, the biggest name going around now is the Eagles quarterbacks coach. It's like, what do you think Fickle is the best hire so far in the AAC, or do you think he's right up there still?
I think he's near the top, but I think Charlie Strong is the best hire for a couple different reasons. Charlie Strong is a very good coach. He kind of got railroaded at Texas, not because he's not a good coach, but because the political situation there was such that he did not have the kind of support he needed from the right people. That's through no fault of his own. It just is what it is. So South Florida gets him. That's a coup for a couple different reasons. He's one of the biggest names on the market. He has a lot of history in Florida. I mean, a lot of people in that area remember him from the Urban Meyer Florida teams as their defensive coordinator. Like that's where he really shot into prominence. And Tampa is like 100% Gator. Like it is all Florida fans down there. It is. So that's going to give them a lot of play with local recruits. And that's something that they need to do. They need to recruit Tampa to win at a high level there. And they've been doing that for the last 5 or 6 years. I mean, Willie Taggart, the early results were very, shaky, but they had no problem acquiring local talent. That was never the issue with them. So getting strong, it just kind of, it's a continuation of that theme. And it's going to be interesting to see what Strong decides to do in terms of his coaching staff, especially on offense, because Texas didn't really take off until this year when they kind of loosened up the reins of the offense. And they have the personnel to do that at South Florida, so they should probably go in that direction. But that's, the first couple of years at Louisville, he didn't exactly try to play that wide-open brand of football. He was a little bit more staid and a little bit more conservative.
Yeah, much to a lot of Louisville fans' disdain. But the rumors are that Sterling Gilbert is going to make the move to South Florida with Strong. That could be... they'll probably definitely be the division favorites next season. With all the talent they have coming back.
And yeah, they should be.
You got to think their drop-off isn't going to be too bad in recruiting. It might even get a little better if Strong can pull in some late recruits.
Yeah, they'll definitely be the favorites for the division and probably the conference as well.
Yeah, one of the things that excited me most about Fickell is his great recruiting history. A couple years ago, he was the ESPN's National Recruiter of the Year. He mainly concentrates on the Midwest and Florida, from what everybody says. And Ohio State has always a lot of good players from the Midwest and Florida. And historically, Florida's been a huge recruiting area for Cincinnati. Even some of the best players on this team are from Florida. Like Mike Boone is a Florida recruit, for example.
Khalil Lewis as well. I mean, like, you have to recruit Florida to have a lot of success at Cincinnati. You have to recruit that area. That was one of the biggest differences when Mark D'Antonio came in, is that they started recruiting Florida again. Under Rick Minner, they really didn't. They focused a lot of their efforts in the Midwest, especially with the JUCOs in Kansas. And they also recruited Texas extensively. You see, since then, has just been primarily a Midwest and Florida kind of recruiting base. Now, they've expanded that a little bit. They have a little bit more play in Georgia than they used to, and that's been all to the good. They should continue to recruit Georgia. But their bread is going to be buttered in southwestern Ohio and in Florida.
Yeah, in that sense, I think Fickell's a very strong hire. No matter what happens, he's going to get solid recruits, at least, to come to Cincinnati. And like one of the things we've been really harping on is that UC needs to step up their recruiting a little bit. The league as a whole has seen their recruiting dip, at least in the national rankings. And getting like a bump up is always good, because in this league, it's all about talent. And if you have the best talent, you can win 6 games pretty easily on average, just because the bottom of the league is going to really struggle to get talent, especially at places like UConn and like Tulane.
Yeah, I mean, that's a really good point. And Tuberville, for what it's worth, his middle two recruiting classes were pretty highly ranked. They were among the first or second highest ranked in the AAC, according to 24/7 Sports. Now, that's what I remember. My memory might be wrong. But the last year, it really fell off. They were not competitive on the recruiting trail at all. And he's got, let's call it 7 weeks till signing day.
And their class this year is not very highly regarded. so far. Because they haven't got any big fish recruits. They've got a lot of solid 3 stars, but no standouts.
Yeah, and that's what... I mean, the eternal hope and optimism for UC fans is that one day someone will be able to construct a fence around 275 and they will get everybody within that area that they want. That's never going to happen. Like, they're never going to win the top-tier kids without exception year after year. That's just... It's too competitive, too many schools recruit there, too many different conferences recruit there. For them to, you know, run the gauntlet there is just incredibly difficult. But what they can do is win the second-tier kids, the regional kids. You know, the guys who are going to West Virginia and Michigan State and Indiana and Purdue, those are the guys they need to win with. You're not going to beat Michigan and Ohio State all that often, but you need to beat the Spartans, and you need to beat, you know, the Mountaineers for kids, because that's, you know, the talented kids in this area are going to be recruited by those type of programs, so you have to find a way to win there.
Yeah, that's definitely the most important part. You can't let all the talent leave the Cincinnati area. Even pulling in, like, one or two big local stars can do a lot just for, like, the regional perception of the program. It's, like, as you mentioned, like, when you have Michigan, Ohio State, even, like, West Virginia, it's, like, some of the other Big Ten teams, like, coming in. Like this is their recruiting territory, not really Cincinnati's recruiting territory. So it's something that you'd like to see Fickell start to change a little bit.
Yeah, and the funny thing about it, like, that's part UC, but it's also a lot to do with the mentality of people in this area. Like, the sad fact of the matter is Cincinnati as an institution has a much better reputation outside of southwestern Ohio than it does in southwestern Ohio. To a lot of people in Cincinnati, UC is still that commuter school down there that nobody ever goes to and everybody gets robbed. Like, to people in Westchester, that's reality. Like, that's what UC is. That's not the case. It hasn't been like that for 15, 20 years. But they still remember it as it was, not as it is. Now, people who come from out of town, from Toledo, from Columbus, from Cleveland, Akron, they have a completely different perception of it. And a lot of kids are going there from those areas because right now, Cincinnati is the hot name in terms of colleges for those kids. So they're pulling a lot of people from Cleveland. They're pulling a lot of people from Akron. They're pulling a lot of people from Columbus. And that's because those people it's easier for them to recognize how good and how much the institution has progressed. Whereas people who are right there just can't see it. I mean, it's really interesting how that's happened, but that's definitely a factor in UC's inability to recruit, you know, that mid-tier kid, because to a lot of them, you know, Indiana's better, going to Purdue is better than going to UC. You'll win more at UC, but Purdue is better.
Well, shit, so that's a really interesting point. It's like, you look at, like, the D'Antonio, Brian Kelly, like, big recruits that all came from the Cleveland area. Like, Shaq Washington and Colaros and Kelsey and so on and so on. Like, almost all the big names, like, players from that era all came from Northern Ohio.
Yeah, and because of that, like, it just broadened the horizons of people in that area to the value of UC. Now, that doesn't mean, you know, given the choice between Ohio State and Cincinnati, that they're going to choose Cincinnati. 9 times out of 10, they'll go to Ohio State, and that's fine. But, like, it's just easier to recruit there because they have a more accurate perception of what the institution is, what the football program is and has been for the last 15 years. Whereas people who are from Cincinnati, it's just the school in the ghetto, so why would you ever go there? You're not going to win. You're not going to do anything, and you'll get robbed. Not at all true, but that's what the perception is.
That's a very interesting topic. And, like, that's something that the next coaching staff definitely has to change, like the local image of Cincinnati football. Like,
yeah.
Bearcats, like, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, like, yeah, they need to do that, but it starts with one kid. Like, you need to get one top-tier kid from Cincinnati to go to Cincinnati. And that hasn't happened. Like, UC hasn't gotten the best player in the city in forever. And they don't even need to get the best. They need to get, you know, the second or third best. And that would still send a huge signal to local kids that, all right, this is a place you can go now and have success.
Well, you could even argue that they don't really have to get the best. They just have to get the biggest, like, buzzworthy name in the city. That seems to be the thing that translates the most, even if they don't have the most stars. Like, if there's, like, a ace quarterback somewhere playing in town that all the papers cover and is, like, on the news. It's like, you can get that kid to come to Cincinnati. It would be a decent buzz, even if he was, like, only, like, a two-star, low three-star recruit.
Yeah, and there are always players like that who have a huge name in the city. Like, what was his name? Dante Love, who went to Withrow. Everybody in the city loved him. They loved watching him play. UC never really sniffed him, and he ended up going to Ball State and having a great career. But, like, that's the kind of kid that you need, because that'll just kind of – that'll energize the city, and it – provides a link between you and the city itself. Like, that's, they just need something to tie it to the place. Because right now, there's nobody on this team that does that.
Especially on the current roster, now that it seems like most of the local kids have all graduated out of the class.
Yeah. That's the issue. I mean, that's really... In pure talent terms, I think Tuberville did a very good job, and it's actually underrated in terms of building the roster. Developing the roster, not so much. But just getting the talent in the place, yeah, he was fine at that. But the downfall of that was, to do that, he had to go down south and unearth gems that previous UC administrations could never even get to, let alone land. Because he has his ties on there. He had no ties here, and he never really hired anybody on the staff that had ties to this city. And that was the downfall of their local recruiting. Like, he said that everybody recruited Cincinnati. Like, when they divvied up their recruiting maps, everybody was in Cincinnati, but nobody knew anybody. So, like, just having the CPAL on your chest, I mean, it helps, but it's if you don't know the people you're talking to, it's not really going to help you seal the deal.
That's part of why Fickell is a pretty strong hire, is he already has all those local ties with all the big high schools in town. They all know who Luke Fickell is, because he's been to Cincinnati for years and years and years recruiting the top players in the city.
Yeah, and this is where we stumble upon the inevitable Combs situation. So, Kerry Combs is not coming, and that's fine. I have no problem whatsoever with that. My guess is that as a condition of coming, he would have to be, you know, named a defensive coordinator or higher. He's not qualified for that. He's not capable of that. He should not get that job. Full stop. I have more confidence in Marcus Freeman calling the defense than I ever would in Kerry Combs. And Kerry's reputation as a recruiter for UC is wildly overblown. You know, he didn't really help UC get the kinds of kids that we were talking about. He helped them get the third-tier kids, the kids who would go to MAC schools otherwise, but he didn't get the second-tier kids who had options to go to Kentucky, West Virginia, Illinois, whatever. He didn't get that level of kid. Not often enough, basically. So I have no problem with him not being on the staff. Anybody who's saying that this is now a bad hire because Kerry Combs is not on the staff is vastly overrating the coaching ability and recruiting ability of Kerry Combs. He's good. He has a personality that people love. But he is not sufficiently tactically sophisticated to have the kind of role that he would require or demand. So if he doesn't want to have a role that doesn't involve him calling the shots with the defense, he doesn't have a role. I'm fine with that.
Yeah, I am as well. I was talking to someone about this the other day. We were talking about Kerry Combs specifically, and they asked me if I thought he would join the staff. I was like, in what capacity? Like, oh, defensive coordinator. I was like, no. Like, we talked about it a little bit last week, but he's like their corners coach at Ohio State and like a special teams coordinator along with Urban Meyer, who, as you mentioned, well, he has the special teams coach.
Yeah, he has the title of special teams coordinator, which comes with a hefty pay raise. But he doesn't actually coach the special teams because Urban Meyer, like, special teams are Urban Meyer's baby. Like, he loves coaching special teams. He got his career started as a special teams coach at Notre Dame. Like, that's what he does.
But watch any Ohio State game, and they talk about how Urban Meyer runs the special teams.
Yeah, so whoever has the title, it doesn't matter. Like, it's like being Chip Kelly's offensive coordinator or Mike Leach's. You got the title, you got the pay raise, fine, but you're not calling the plays.
And Urban Meyer has even tweeted out that Coombs is going to have a bigger role in the Ohio State defensive coordinator staff. So it seems like Coombs ended up in a pretty solid place himself.
And watch OSU's defensive S&P rankings fall like a lead brick.
Of course, he didn't say what kind of role he would have. He just said it would be expanded.
Yeah, you just don't want him in the room. That's my point.
And to throw this out there, it's got to think his salary at Ohio State is would probably be pretty comparable to his salary at Cincinnati. And if he's already happy at Ohio State, which seems more like a lateral move, since he'll probably never be a head coach.
Yeah, I mean, he'll never be a head coach. He's almost 60 years old. He's never even been interviewed for a MAC job. That's all you need to know. Like, it's just not happening.
Said, everybody does love him, and a lot of people were disappointed that he's not joining the staff.
Yeah, like, don't get me wrong. Like, people are saying, like, I hate Kerry Combs the person. And, like, I've had this accusation thrown at me at Twitter. Like, no, Kerry Combs the person is pretty cool. I know people who know him very well. I've not heard anything bad about him as a person. As a coach, he has severe limitations. And at a program like UC, where you really have to maximize your resources and you really have to have quality coaches at every position, because you are – it is really all about maximizing the effectiveness of your coaching staff. You can't have a guy who doesn't pull his weight and doesn't really know how to teach and can't get his guys to be in the right spots and do the right things. And that's to me, that's what Kerry Combs is. I might be wrong on that, and if I am – I'll apologize, but like, I just don't think he's that guy. We have a lot of evidence that suggests he is not that guy.
Yeah, we absolutely do. And we're on the same page with that one. Like, he seems happy at Ohio State. And if he's going to be Cincinnati's defensive coordinator, he can still be happy at Ohio State. Do you have any other lingering thoughts from the Fickell hire?
No, let's move on to something saddening and depressing. So let's talk about the Butler game.
Butler 75, Cincinnati 65. Second half was a disaster for the Bearcats in this game. The game was tied at halftime. They obviously lose by 10 points. You kind of just get drubbed in the second half, in large part because Kyle Washington ended up in foul trouble. He did foul out, but he only played 19 minutes in this game, and there was a stark difference between Cincinnati with Washington on the floor and Washington off the floor, and Butler was really able to take advantage of it.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, it seems like the only way the offense could work is if Kyle's in there, because he's the only person in ISO situations who gets positive results. You know, Troy had a posted an offensive rating of 121, which is not bad. I mean, it's good. But the way he had to go about doing it with him dominating every possession is such a problem, because as we talked about last week, you have other guys on this team who can do things with the ball, but they can't do things with the ball if you don't give it to them. The way he's consuming possessions is to the detriment of his teammates. That's really the problem. And that hasn't really changed. Like, UC's offensive rating for the game was, what, 0.97 points per possession, which is well below average. Butler posted a respectable 1.12, which is above average, especially when you factor in the quality of the defense they were doing it against. I mean, the starkest thing about this game, just in watching it, is just the way the offenses are constructed and work. All five guys for Butler are always in motion. Even when the ball's not, they always have actions and movements on the backside that are designed to free up secondary options. When you watch UC play, you have a main action, which is usually a pick and roll, or attempt from a post player to duck in and get possession, and everybody else standing around watching them do this. Like, it's so easy to defend. And it's been this way for years, and it's just such a problem against good teams, and it's always going to be a problem against good teams until they find a way to stop doing what they've been doing and change things on offense, because you can't have four stationary players and one person doing something with the ball. That just doesn't work in 2016. There's better ways to play offense. And UC just stubbornly keeps doing the same shit they've been doing forever.
Yeah, that's actually something I wanted to get into. In the second half especially, that's what the game turned into. It was pretty much all ISO for Copain or Evans, because Washington played 9 minutes and he didn't even score, I don't believe. He scored 1 point the second half. But he was out half the game in the second half, and the offense just really died. And, like, a large part of it's just because there's no other action going on, as you said. It's like, if Evans has the ball, he's definitely going up with it. And he had a pretty successful second half. Like, Copain, like, he's going up with it. He had to dribble a ton, which was really to the detriment of the offense. And then you end up in a situation where, like, neither one of those guys really moved the ball. So Cincinnati has 3 second-half assists to 5 turnovers. Just really terrible offense. And UC was 12 of 33 from the field. Another terrible three-point shooting game overall, 6 of 26. And they don't get to the free-throw line.
It's very difficult to win against good teams if you don't get to the line to generate 3 points, and if you don't generate additional points from the three-point line. The reason why UC shoot so badly at three-pointer isn't because they have bad three-point shooters on this team. They have a couple of pretty good ones. Even Troy Copain in his 2-year-long shooting slump is still at like 30%, which 5 years ago would have made him like the best three-point shooter on a Mick team. But the real problem is all their threes are contested because they don't do anything to free up those looks. Like, there were so many plays that stick out vividly in my mind where you have, you know, UC builds in stuff that you're supposed to do outside of the main action, but the guys don't do it. Like, they're just literally going through the motions. Like, I don't think I've seen an off-ball screen set by a UC player in the last 2 years. They set two in the Butler game, and both of them were called for illegal picks. Because they don't do it. Like, they have no practice doing this off the ball, so they don't know how to do it. And even when they're running their actions, you see Kyle Washington setting a flare screen for Kevin Johnson to go out to the three-point line. You know what both Kevin and Kyle are doing? They're watching Troy dribble the ball. They're not committing to the action that they're running. They're watching the guy with the ball to see if maybe, by some odd chance, he might pass it so that this side of the action is actually going to mean something. And if they see Troy looking at them, they'll actually set a good screen and, you know, play it correctly. If not, they just kind of jog around out there. And nobody holds anybody to account for this bullshit. And that's so frustrating for me. Because this team, as we keep saying, like, we hammer this point home seemingly year after year, but this year more than most, is capable of so much more than this. And they're going to probably slaughter the AAC schedule because the AAC is not as good this year as it was in previous years. And they'll probably rack up 25 wins again. And they'll get into the tournament. They might even win the conference tournament for the first time in fucking forever. But when they're exposed to better teams, this shit stands out as unacceptable and not sustainable, and they'll lose in the first and second round like they do every single year.
Yes, as long as they're on the opposite side of the Connecticut part of the bracket, they'll be fine in the conference tournament.
And man, too soon. Too soon.
The offense as a whole is really frustrating because, like, as you mentioned a bit ago, like, watch Butler move the ball around. 13 assists on 23 field goals for Butler. Cincinnati had 8 assists on 26 field goals. And, like, it's just them just not moving the ball, period. Like, Copain had a huge first half, like 15 points. It seemed like he didn't even miss a shot the first half. But then, like, the second half comes in, like, he's really the only offense, and he ends up taking a lot of contested shots. And he just 1 of 4 at the free throw line for Copain, and it's a gigantic disappointment. And he missed all his threes in the second half after hitting a couple in the first half, including one at the end of the half where he just nailed it right in that little guy on Butler's face. It's pretty nice to see.
Yeah, but the difference between that, the three-pointer over Tyler Lewis and the rest of his shots is his feet were quick. Like, he set his feet quickly. Like, that is the key to a jump shot. If you ask any shooting coach, they will say it all starts with the feet. If your feet are slow into your shot's going to be slow and it's going to be inaccurate because you're not going to get consistent lift. It's going to be different every single time, so there's no consistency. Troy's feet are all over the fucking place when he shoots. Like, one shot is completely different from the next shot. Like, he's actively searching for something to change what's happening without changing the one thing that he has to change, which is his footwork has to be better and more consistent. Like, until that happens, he's just going to be a 30% three-point shooter. And UC needs him to be better than that if they're going to play this way. Like, you can play this kind of basketball if you execute. If you have guys who can win in one-on-one situations. If you have guys who are good, consistent shooters. But, like, that's... Like, Troy is the same shooter now that he was a couple years ago, except a couple years ago he had a little bit better luck. And this year... Oh, and a few more open looks because Farad Cobb was on the ball giving him open looks off the catch. When was the last time we saw Troy off the ball? It's been a while. Like, Justin Jennifer played 9 minutes in this game and had a generally positive impact on it. But he needs to play more. Kevin Johnson played 29 minutes. He had an offensive rating of 61. I don't care how good he is at defense. That is not sustainable. That is not acceptable. They need to do other things.
Yeah, it's like Jennifer played almost all his minutes in the first half, and they played Copain off the ball a lot in the first half.
He played well. Funny about that.
It's Kevin Johnson played 13 minutes in the first half of that game and played pretty much the entire second half. I think his minutes in the second half went to Cumberland, not Jennifer.
Yeah, and Cumberland had a couple... Like, he put up 4 points. He found it, like, scratched his way to a garbage offensive rebound and an easy putback. But he had a couple shaky moments. But, like, Cumberland's another guy who just gets in the right position. And that's invaluable. That's an invaluable skill if you're going to play like this. But they don't, Mick doesn't trust him. For, you know, I get it. Like, he's not. He's a shaky defender. His rotations are off. But my God, man, you have to score the basketball to beat good teams. Like, you're not going to impose your will and make every game 55-50 like you did against Iowa State. That's an outlier. Like, he's taking the he's learning the wrong lesson from that game. It's like, it worked against them. Let's keep doing it. It'll work against other good teams. No, it's not. How many times do we have to play this out where you try to control the pace and the possession and make it slow and a slog and a rock fight. And the better, you know, the team who executes better, who has a better offensive system, winds up grinding you down in the end and getting a couple of, you know, good possessions against your elite defense. And that's the difference because you can't score the ball.
You mentioned the other two things I really want to get to about this game. We're going to end up harping on the bench all season, but it's definitely worth mentioning when this is the third game out of three marquee games where the bench gives you nothing. You mentioned Cumberland had 4. They had 1 put back. That was pretty much it for the bench. Like, Quadri Moore is an offensive 0. Trey Scott and Brooks, Brooks barely played, but Trey Scott is almost a net negative offensively. And Jennifer, like, doesn't really play enough to make a mark in this game. It's like, your bench just gives you absolutely nothing, and you have to rely on your starters for everything, which is fine against some teams, but when Kyle Washington's barely playing and not doing anything on the interior, which was a really successful game plan by Butler, is they didn't let Washington get anything inside at all. His only field goals came off of three-pointers. But, like, Gary Clark had a solid game. But, like, that was pretty much it. Like, your guards penetrate, and then nobody else scores. It's like, when you play SMU, and even, like, a team like Temple, who's pretty solid defensively, and your talented teams like UConn, even though they're around 500, they still have a ton of talent. Like, you're going to run into these same problems against every good team you play when you have zero off the bench.
And that's why the move to be made is to swap Justin Jennifer for Kevin Johnson. Because what this team really needs is a point guard. Troy is not a point guard, in the same way that Kashmir Wright is not an actual point guard. Like, they play point guard, but that's not their, like, their mentality is not to involve everyone. Their mentality is to dominate the ball and get theirs. That's fine, but you can only have one of those guys. Right now they have two, and they're getting essentially, on average, they're getting negative production from the Troy Copain and Kevin Johnson backcourt. They need to flop that. Like, Kevin Johnson wants to dribble the ball and shoot every shot. Fine. Do it with the second team. You'll be more effective there. You're playing less competent defenders. You can have the ball as much as you want because no one else on that bench unit is capable of really handling the ball. But he is destroying this starting five. Like, his inefficiency and his the amount of possessions he consumes, like, every time he touches the ball, it's going up or it's a turnover, seemingly. I don't know if he's had an assist all year. You can't have that. Like, Gary needs the ball more. Kyle needs the ball more. Troy doesn't need the ball more, but he needs to be off the ball because that's where he's more effective as a player. But, I mean, as long as they stick with the starting five, like, the ceiling on this team is what it's always been. Like, you win 25 games, you go to the tournament, you probably don't win the conference tournament because, I don't know, somebody makes an 80-foot shot, and then you lose on the first weekend. Because teams in the tournament throw something at you that you can't quite cope with, and everybody knows your plan, so they have a plan for it.
I think, just like, looking at the production from the first half to the second half, like, the team, I think, was a lot better when Jennifer was on the floor. I don't have his plus-minus. I'm looking at Butler's box score since Cincinnati, on their Go Bearcats website, has no box score.
Yeah, any game they lose, they don't put one up. Just like I'm not even joking. That's just what happened.
It's just baffling. All you have is a game story.
Yeah.
Like, the offense, like, shot, it's not all because of Jennifer, but the offense with 44% the first half. They hit almost all their threes in the first half. Then 36% the second half, 2 of 15 from 3. And when your offense is just two guys grouping Evans in with Copain, just pounding the ball, it's really hard to score consistently. And, like, Gary Clark had a really solid game. Like, 7 of 13, had a double-double, 14-12. But almost all of his points came in the first half, because Butler's strategy of cutting off the post really threw the offense for a loop. And, like, with Washington on the floor, they just really concentrated that in on Clark. So you have to give credit to, like, their big guys. Like, Travis had a pretty solid game. It didn't show in the box score, but he was really solid defensively, and so was the guy from Memphis, Baldwin. He had a really solid game. It seemed like Butler blocked a lot more shots. It was Woodson from Memphis, pardon, who blocked a couple of big shots in the second half.
Yeah, I mean, but, like, that Butler game was such a stark reminder of just how, like, they managed their roster correctly. Like, not everybody on their team had a good game. Like, they had a lot of guys with negative offensive ratings. They had a guy who played 10 minutes who put up a 24, which Kevin Johnson is like, I could beat that. But even, like, they make smart plays all the time. Like, they always make the correct decision.
Yeah, and the defense was another thing, was the second thing I wanted to get to. It's like, Butler is a different team than almost everybody else. They're kind of like a Wisconsin, Virginia, where, like, they play you right into their system. And that's what the Bearcats, to that trap, like, huge. First half, it was Butler getting a ton of threes, almost all open looks from their offense. And then UC comes out to guard the three. Everything starts going inside, and Butler ends up at the free throw line like 25 times the second half.
Yeah, I mean, they have counters for your counters. And that's what good teams have. Like, they can, like, we keep saying the same thing. They can do different stuff. UC has one thing they can do. They don't have stuff. They have the thing. They have the one thing. And that one thing can work against a lot of teams. It can get you to 25 points. You can hammer your way to a winning record every single year. You can hammer your way to the tournament every single year. But if you want to advance in that setting, you have to have more. Like, you just have to have more clubs in the bag. Like, what UC does is, like, going to the golf course with a driver. Just a driver. For everything. Try putting with a driver. It's not going to go so well, because that's not what it's designed to do. You know, you have to have more clubs in your bag, but UC just got Big Bertha. That's all they got.
Yeah, and it's just really disappointing to watch the teams kind of struggle with the same things. Seems like almost year after year.
Year after year, yeah, and they struggle with the same thing year after year, but the talent is better every single fucking year. It's like Mickey is an artist because he can take anything and turn it into the exact same thing every single year. With no deviation. Like, this team is capable of more than what Mick has shown in the past. But he's going to turn it into everything he's always turned every team into. I mean, that's a skill. It's really amazing. But it's frustrating as fuck, because if you have national ambition, if you want to be the elite of the elite, this shit isn't going to do it. You're never going to get to that level, because there is a definite ceiling on how good you can be playing caveman basketball. Like, you can make every game into a rock fight, but some teams are just not going to engage you in that, and they're just going to shoot you in the head. Like, a gun beats a rock.
And it's just like kind of crazy. Like, not to say Butler doesn't have talent on their roster, because they obviously do. And, like, their recruiting's got a lot better since they joined the Big East. But it's like Chris Holtman, like, it seems like he's doing this with a bunch of, like, just guys. Like, none of their players are really, like, standout special players. I doubt they'll have one player on the All-Big East first team. But they play so well together, and it seems like, especially during the second half, like, Cincinnati played apart. And when you're playing together, instead of playing apart, especially, like, on offense, because the offense turns the other defense, like, to shit, kind of. And that's what happened to Cincinnati. And normally, a very solid defensive team gives up 1.12 points a possession to Butler.
Yeah, and Shravis is the guy who was really, like, really stood out to me, because he's not that big. He's 6'7", 230. Like, that's pretty average for a college basketball player. He's not that fast. He's not a real athlete. He can probably jump over a phone book, but not much more. But, like, his intellect is incredible. Like, watching Andrew Shravis is like watching a great midfielder in soccer. Like, he just dictated the tempo, made the right plays, got everybody involved. Like, he was essentially their point guard with the plays that he was making. You know, he didn't have a great shooting night. He only had 12 points. But his offensive rating was 118 because he got to the free throw line, because that's what it called for. He had 5 assists, 0 turnovers. I mean, like, he was just, like, watching him, it made me jealous. And there's not many guys who I get jealous of, like, when another team has them, but God, guys like that, like, and that's the other thing is, UC probably has a guy on the team who can be like that. Like, Gary could do what he did. Like, he's that skilled a passer. He's a skilled big man. He can do that kind of stuff. But it's like Butler carved out this role for Travis because this is what Travis can do. And then they built their team around that. It's like UC has specific positions that do specific things, and they're not going to deviate from them ever. And it, like, you just can't be that rigid and have high-level success in this sport. You just can't. This is a thinking sport, but there's no creativity, autonomy, flow to what UC does in offense. And that's the problem. That's always been the problem. And, like, I'm not saying fire Mick. Like, 25 wins a year is nothing to sneeze at. Getting the tournament every year is nothing to sneeze at. I just wish that he would shake up his staff so that he can get some different offensive ideas in here. Different ideas, period. Because they are so ingrained with what they've done that they're incapable of maximizing the talent on this roster. Because what they've done is what they were doing when they had a bunch of tough guys who weren't really that good at basketball, but were tough and athletic and would just beat the hell out of you. That worked then, and it was the only way they could succeed. UC can succeed with this roster doing different things, but there's just no interest from the head man to do it.
Yeah, to expound upon your last point real quick, it's like they play offense the same way they did when they had three guys on the entire team that could score. And just, like, look up and down this roster, they have four guys in your starting lineup who can get pretty much any basket they want. Like, hypothetically, a Kevin Johnson can be a solid wing contributor, as was, say, with Jennifer. And we've seen Cumberland, like, play well offensively against some of the garbage teams UC's played. Like, so you have at least four guys who can get their shots, and three guys who we know can get shots for other people. So Washington hasn't really shown great passing eyes so far. And then you have complementary wing players. Like, this was what, like, a top 50 offense really could be. I guess UC's still in the top 50. It's what a top 25 offense could be. It's like Duke had five guys who could shoot. Like, they'd be unstoppable. And like they normally do, that's why they're so good. Like, UC still got like a top 40 offense, but it doesn't really play like that. Especially in games like this, where you kind of just get shut down by one of the good teams you play.
Well, and I think what it really comes down to is, Mick is an inherently conservative coach. He's not really, like, he does what he does, and he doesn't really want to change. But to succeed, you have to take risk. Is it a risk playing Justin Jennifer 20 minutes a game? Because at his best, he is going to be an average defender. Because of his size, because of his lack of physicality, he's just, that's where he tops out as a defender. But he gives you so much more on offense that it's worth the risk of dealing with his defense.
But you don't even have to go that extreme. He can play like 12, 15 minutes a game. I think the offense is better, like the 12 to 15 minutes he plays, but he just doesn't seem like he'll ever get that consistent run against any of the name opponents on the schedule, which I really don't understand. I don't understand the rotations for the most part.
No, this rotation makes no sense. Having Kevin Johnson in your starting lineup and giving him 30 minutes a game makes no sense.
I'm going to agree with you on this. If you're going to give Kevin Johnson 30 minutes, he should be getting him off the bench. Like, finish Kevin Johnson the second half of every game. It doesn't matter. But you need, like, to start the second half and the first half with Jennifer on the floor. And just to get something going offensively. And as you mentioned, like, if you're going to, like, they don't really split their starters a ton when they go on the bench. It's like having Johnson at least be one competent offensive player off the bench when you play somebody like a Butler or Iowa State or another game where they got no bench points. Like, that's a huge boost to have at least one guy off the bench that the other team has to worry about scoring.
Yeah, and, like, even Justin Jefferson's not a scorer. That's fine. Like, I mean, he's a good 3-point shooter. Don't get me wrong. But like, his value, he gets you easy buckets. Like, he gets Gary easy buckets. He gets Kyle easy buckets. He gets Jacob Evans easy buckets. UC gets zero easy buckets. They don't run in transition. They don't run off turnovers. They don't run period. So why aren't you playing pretty much the only guy that you have on your roster who can get easy buckets for other people in the half court? Play him. Like, your downside is limited. Your upside is very high. Just, like, if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. Fine, but freaking try it. That's what the regular season is for. It's about experimenting with the guys that you have. It's not about saying, these are my nine, we're playing them this way in this order for the rest of the year.
Yeah, hopefully we'll see some sort of shakeup this week. Cincinnati plays Texas Southern and Fairleigh Dickinson. So they should have pretty easy slate this week. And hopefully we'll see a lot more of Jennifer with the starters instead of just the bench unit. Now, do you have anything else before we close this one out, Matt?
No, I'm good. We'll do this next week.
We'll talk to you next week. And as usual, go Bearcats.
Go Bearcats.